The following is a recording for Manuel Perez with Your Strat SA DECV on Thursday, October 24th, 2019 at 10 o'clock a.m. Central Time. Good morning and welcome everyone to Credito Real's third quarter 2019 earnings conference call. Credito Real issued its quarterly report on Wednesday, October 23rd, 2019. If you did not receive a copy via email, please do not hesitate to contact us in Mexico City at 525-5228-9753. It is important to note that the presentation and the MP3 recording referred to in this call will be available at www.creal.mx. Before we begin the call today, I would like to remind you that the information discussed in today's call may include forward-looking statements on Credito Real's future financial performance and prospects, which are subject to risk and uncertainties. Actual results may differ materially, and the company cautions not to rely unduly on these forward-looking statements. The company undertakes no obligation to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statement. With us this morning from Credito Real, we have Mr. Angel Romanos, Chairman and CEO, and Mr. Carlos Ochoa, Deputy CEO. They will discuss on the more important strategic, financial, and operating aspects of the third quarter 2019. I will now turn the conference over to Mr. Romanos.
Thank you, operator. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. Even though we acknowledge that this quarter net income-wise we fell short of expectations, we are convinced that by the end of the year we will be able to reach our guidance. As we are seeing significantly less pressure over the consolidated NIM due to interest rate cuts in Mexico, debt refinancing, and product mix. The steady growth in the loan portfolio of the company thus consolidating the performance recorded as of the first half of the year was firmly supported by incremental dynamism achieved on our international operations. In this context, we ended the period serving over 9,1300 clients drawing from our innovative financial solutions that quarter over quarter allow us to further expand our customer base and average loan. Regarding the prevailing environment of the third quarter, it is important to note that although the growth of overall Mexican economy remained slow, we observed resiliency in the CMD segments where we serve, driven by the increase in base salaries and the firm consumer confidence that is still ranging at high levels. On the international side, in the United States front, despite the arising of certain bullish expectations, we do not expect signals of deceleration for the year 2020, given the realization of federal elections. On the contrary, GDP is growing above its equilibrium rate. And in Central America, Instacredit's results clearly reflect signs of broader stability. Turning now to our performance by segment, our operations in Mexico recorded mixed results, as payroll origination was stable but lower than expected, in contrast with the strong momentum of small and medium companies. In this regard, payroll loan origination went down on an annual basis, but gained traction on a sequential basis as we kept adding clients of solid credit profiles. On the small and medium-sized enterprises front, loan origination continued to perform solidly by increasing 42% year over year. This outstanding growth stems from our comprehensive strategy oriented to unattended companies of solid credit profiles. As for used cars in Mexico, loan origination performance showed signs of an incremental traction, as we saw the igniting of an enhanced dynamism in its operating drivers. All in all, overall loan portfolio in Mexico reached over 34 billion pesos as of quarter end, up 22% versus the same period last year. While we recorded an outperforming NPL ratio of just 1.3%, which was improved in 10 basis points from the rate recorded a year ago. It is worth emphasizing once more the resiliency of our operations in Mexico, as there is further room for growth in the underserved niche as a traditional banking. On the one hand, and on the other, a great opportunity of keep tapping into the service of Mexican SMEs through attractive and customized financial solutions. Additionally, there are further grounds of support for the industry's performance that stemmed from the government programs oriented to widen the financial inclusion in Mexico. In relation to our international businesses, Credito Real USA kept momentum, fueled by the ongoing consolidation of commercial and operating endeavors that quarter over quarter bring generation of new synergies. Consequently, loan origination growth achieved at a triple-digit rate, as we were able to effectively engage thanks to a unified and streamlined platform, while pushing forward key initiatives to operate under comprehensive risk controls. Therefore, delinquency decreased 10 basis points on an annual basis. On Central America, we moved forward in our endeavors of stabilization, seeing positive signs of recovery despite the prevailing crisis in Nicaragua. Therefore, Instacredit's loan origination grew 15% in an annual basis, and its non-performing loan ratio solidly decreased to 5% from 7.3% recorded in the same period last year. This outcome reflects the implementation of better aligned and more responsive credit origination and operating standards oriented to normalize asset quality and profitability. Going over the developments of the period, especially noteworthy was the international offering of senior notes for 350 million euros that marked an important milestone in our history as an active issuer of corporate debt, making Credito Real the first Mexican non-banking financial institution and the only high-yield Latin American company to perform this kind of issuance over the past 5 years. Actions like this, together with the August subscription of $110 million syndicated credit line and the recent investment grade rating given by the Japan Credit Rating Agency, geared towards the enhancement of our investors and funders' base. Wrapping up, we continue moving forward in the right path, despite the challenging macroeconomic environment across the different markets where we operate, performing at a solid pace on SMEs in Mexico while counting on a resilient performance in payroll and having a sustained trend of growth in our international operations, both in the United States and Central America. In addition, we walk ahead towards the year encouraged by our operating fundamentals and positive on the landscape of lower interest rates foreseen for next quarters, as it will allow us to increase our margins of benefits. Finally, I would like to thank our customers, partners, and shareholders for their unwavering support in our crusade to expand the financial inclusion in all the markets we serve. Before closing, I would also like to personally invite you to join us in our 2019 Investor Day that will be held for the first time in New York City, where we'll discuss about our business plan and further expectations. At this point, I hand the call over to Carlos, who will discuss on greater detail our financial performance over the quarter.
Thank you, Angel. Good morning, and thank you all for being part of our quarterly conference call. Starting the discussion of the quarter, in 3Q19, the unfavorable evolution of the FX caused a negative effect, which was reflected in the financial margin and in the intermediation result on the following items: an unhedged $30 million credit facility and the mark-to-market valuation of the derivative financial instruments, which jointly generated a 85 million pesos loss. Moving forward to the P&L, interest income increased 15.1% year-over-year from 2.6 billion pesos to 3 billion pesos, reflecting the consistent growth of the consolidated loan portfolio over the last 12 months. Interest expense totaled 1.2 billion, up almost 44% when compared to the last of 833 million pesos in the same period last year. This variation primarily stems from the company's larger debt balance and higher funding costs, as well as from the FX losses previously discussed. As a result, the financial margin posts a slight annual increase of 1.5%, reaching 1.8 billion pesos, as improved results of our international operations were partially offset by a more modest pace of the payables growth in Mexico. Provision for loan losses decreased by 9.1% year-over-year, totaling 429 million pesos, derived from the improvement in loan portfolio quality across all business segments. The coverage ratio solidly increased to almost 180% rate, reflecting the non-performing loan growth ratio enhancement. Administrative and promotion expenses totaled 930 million pesos, down 1.2% when compared to the 941 million pesos recorded in the same period last year. This variation is attributed to the continued generation of operational efficiencies in Credito Real USA and cost optimizations performed in Insta Credit, which offset the effects of these debt issuance expenses and further expansion in Mexico's loan portfolio. Net income amounted 436 million pesos, representing an annual decrease of almost 14%, largely due to the factors already explained, including other minor effects such as softened collection of charge-off accounts and foreign exchange rate fluctuations. On a year-to-date basis, return on average equity was 12.9%, and excluding the perpetual notes effect, this metric stood at 17.5%, while return on average assets was at 3.9%. Capitalization ratio stands at 37.9% as of September 30, 2019. The funding cost remained at 13.2%, in line with that of the previous quarter, reflecting the recent interest rate cuts performed by the central bank and lower borrowing costs associated to the credit facilities subscribed during the quarter, including a $110 million indicated facility. Towards the year end, 2019 and the upcoming quarters, we expect that our funding cost contract, due to the rising opportunities from the prevailing environment of lower reference rates, and more important, to lower debt funding costs associated to the euro-denominated bond issued this October, which represents approximately 250 basis points improvement against that of the senior notes 2023. Moving in broader detail in the analysis of our loan portfolio dynamics, the consolidated loan portfolio amounted to 43.5 billion pesos at the end of the third quarter of 2019, a 24.4% year-over-year growth, driven by a positive performance across all business segments, outstanding small and medium-sized enterprises. SME's loan portfolio increased 86.2% on an annual basis, reaching 5.9 billion pesos, as customer response remained solid. This portfolio accounts for 13.8% of Credito Real's consolidated loan portfolio as of the 3Q19, increasing its share by 460 basis points in relation to the third quarter of 18. Payroll portfolio totaled 27 billion pesos, up 11.5%, as there has been a certain deceleration in the growth rate that follows a higher caution in the expense decision, and which is expected to normalize once the Mexican economy regains traction. Used cars in Mexico portfolio amounted to 1.3 billion pesos, an annual increase of 54.5%, driven by our wide commercial outreach. As for the United States businesses, the portfolio totals 3.4 billion pesos, a 78% year-over-year increase, representing 7.7% of the consolidated loan portfolio. The performance was driven by a further consolidation of the Credito Real USA operational platform, which allows to serve customers in a more competitive manner and develop new commercial strategies to attract new customers. Instacredit's loan portfolio grew by 12.6% to reach 5 billion pesos, largely driven by the development of key initiatives to further stabilize its operational and financial performance in the face of the remaining challenges in Central America. In this context, I would like to remind that we will continue prioritizing profitability and asset quality over origination as we seek to fortify our operation in Central America to face the wavering economic conditions of the region. Moving on to loan portfolio quality, the consolidated NPL ratio declined from 1.7% to 1.7% from 2.1% in the third quarter 18, resulting from the improvement of our credit origination and collection controls. Turning to our balance sheet, as of September 30, 2019, total assets increased 22% or 10.4 billion pesos compared to the same period of 2018, amounting 57.4 billion pesos following the consolidated loan portfolio growth, debt issuances, and credit facilities subscribed over the last 12 months. Outstanding debt totaled 37.5 billion pesos, up 34.5% or 9.6 billion pesos more on a year-over-year basis, largely explained by the placement of our senior notes due 2026 and the subscription of the syndicated loan, syndicated facility. To conclude, as of quarter end, stockholders' equity totaled 16.5 billion pesos, an annual increase of 7.7% or 1.2 billion pesos derived from the already discussed factors. With this, I conclude my remarks, and now let me turn back the call to the operator to open the line for Q&A.
Ladies and gentlemen, to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad at this time. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure that your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. We'll take our first question from Ernesto Gabilondo with Bank of America.
Hi, good morning, Angel and Carlos. Thanks for the opportunity. I have three questions. My first question is if you can elaborate in the impact that affected the bottom line this quarter, and then maybe I think they will not repeat next quarter. For example, the market loss, lower fees, and weaker expenses associated to the recent debt issuances. My second question is on your cost of funding. I believe the implied cost of funding is at 13.2%. But with the recent debt issuance at a lower rate, we believe there could be some benefits for your total cost of funding. So would it be reasonable to expect the cost of funding improving by around 150 basis points next quarter, or do you think the benefit could be even wider by including the benefits of lower interest rates? And then finally, my last question is on the market loss. If you can elaborate on how can we be monitoring the potential impacts for this line. I believe you have around 16 derivatives, and during the quarter there was an appreciation of the peso that resulted in the market loss. So can you share with us, is there an FX level or a range that we can consider to understand when can you have positive or negative impacts in this line? Thank you.
Thank you, Ernesto. Let me address first the cost of funds question you asked. I mean, we are convinced that we already passed the peak part of the cost of funds, meaning that the 13.2% that we are already seeing, that is going to be the maximum. From here, we will expect improvements in different fronts. For starters, you know, the reference rate here in Mexico. We would expect an additional 50. That's our base case scenario here in Mexico. It's an additional 50 bps cost for the remaining of the year. And altogether, the cost that we've experienced over the year, the 50 or 75 bps that's been cut already, that should represent an additional benefit for the company of around 30 to 40 million pesos, something within that range. More important than that is that if you look at the tender offer that we just successfully did at the beginning of this month, we were able to tender for $200 million pesos out of the $625 million outstanding 2023. But the most attractive part about that one is that we were paying for those $200 million, we were paying TIIE plus 614. That was the cost of those of that debt. And we replaced that one with the euro transaction that we recently issued, and we replaced that one in pesos at 11.33, a fixed rate at that level. So if you think in those terms, that would represent over an amount of $200 million, a benefit of 250 bps, which is a major impact. It's going to represent a major impact on that one. Additional to that, what we have is that we are finally seeing that the credit facility, the credit line that we have with NAPIN, which right now stands at 1.5 billion pesos, and that has been maxed out for the past 2-3 years, we believe that in the next credit committee of NAPIN, that could be increased to a 5 billion facility. And the good thing about that one is that that could provide us with the financing for the SMEs, with the much needed financing for the SMEs business at a much lower rate. Just to remind you, in terms of the cost of the NAPIN lines, we are paying something around TIIE plus 280, TIIE plus 250, which is very interesting in terms of cost. So all these effects combined and it makes us believe that the pressure over the NIM that we experience over the quarter, that should be, you know, easing by the end of the year, and that should remain for the next. For the next few quarters. In addition to that, it's also worth noting where we are seeing the product mix. I mean, if you look at the business, if you look at the SMEs business on the one hand, the good thing about having a much larger average ticket size on the SME side is that coupled with our business model of, you know, cherry picking or cross-selling with existing customer base, that should represent, you know, the even though the margin, there's some pressure over the margin because of the SMEs business, but on the other hand, there's an improvement in terms of the cost of risk, which is also beneficial in terms of net income. So where we are seeing things is that the SMEs business shouldn't amount for more than 15% of the book. I think that should be the case, that the SMEs business should be maximum around the 15% of the book. And by having by not increasing that business much more, should release pressure over the NIM. So in terms of the NIM and the cost of funds question, I think, as I was telling at the beginning, we definitely believe that we were at the peak until this quarter. I don't know if that answers your question in terms of the cost of funds.
Yes, that's great. So 250 basis points benefit, right?
That is correct, over the 200 million tender of the 2023. That's
perfect.
Now, when it comes to the question of the hedging and the effect that the volatility and the FX causes on our P&L, first, for starters, I would say that we are very, very, you know, conservative in terms of hedging. If you look at all our foreign currency denominated debt, we just have 100 million pesos with other instruments, with a different financial derivative instrument other than the cross-currency swap, the whole cross-currency swaps. So the volatility that you are seeing is, given that we are constrained, you know, due to the accounting principles of the CNBV here in Mexico, whatever we have with the call spreads, which are those $100 million, with a call spread, that causes some volatility over the P&L. As for the rest, we don't experience any volatility. You just get to see the effect over the balance sheet in terms of mark to market. So in terms of the what we experienced during the third Q, the thing was that we have a $30 million short-term facility, which was unhedged. Basically, that was unhedged, and that causes a negative effect of around $30 million or something. And on the other hand, what we have is the mark-to-market of the derivative financial instrument. This was the call spread that that causes the remaining 50 million or 50 something million. So the combination of those two effects, that was the, what causes the 85 million pesos loss that you saw this quarter.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Carlos.
And then you have the other thing. I mean, for example, more subtenant. What you see, I mean, another thing that another line which wasn't as positive as in other quarters, the other income, the line other income from operations, which is mostly the collection that we get from charge of accounts. Well, basically, the easiest explanation for that lower collection of charge of accounts is that we have a much better performance on the consolidated portfolio. That leads to a lower, you know, late charges, collection, and charge of accounts. So basically, that was the mostly the explanation of that one. I think that with that, I cover your three questions, right, Ernesto?
And we'll take our next question from Carlos Rivera with Barclays.
Hi, good morning, everyone, and thanks for the opportunity to ask questions. My first one is a follow-up on the 85 million loss. Just if I understood correctly, this 85 is composed of two elements. So if you could just disaggregate this one and tell us how much corresponds to the unhedged $30 million, because I think that will be the non-recurring element and not the other part. And my second question is related to loan loss provisions. Year over year, there's a positive evolution, but quarter over quarter, there's a big jump. I think that is coming from the car loans. So if you could elaborate a little bit more, what is giving this jump quarter over quarter and over the next quarters and next year, what level do you think we can expect for loan loss provisions? Thank you.
Look, I mean, in terms of your first question, it was the $85 million are explained, you know, 30 million were for the, you know, the unhedged facility. And as for the other 52.6 million, that's the exact figure, that's for the, you know, on the valuation of the financial derivatives. So basically that's the explanation for those two elements of the 85 million, right?
Okay.
When it comes to your second question, you know, regarding the coverage ratio, I believe it was regarding the coverage ratio, right? So basically, you see, I mean, for starters, it's worth emphasizing that we follow, that the way we provision is based on expected losses, and this is CNBV compliant, right? So basically, what I'm trying to say is that this is just an input for us. I mean, the way to reach for the provisions, there are a number of elements that affect the provisioning. One of them, clearly, is the asset quality, and the other one was there are many factors. But basically, what I'm trying to say is that an input as it is, I mean, we just, you know, we would like to have something lower in terms of provisions, but it's basically that. And it's also explained by the seasonality in the state. So basically, those are the factors that affect the levels of provisioning and overall.
Okay. So just for the last quarter of the year, what is the typical seasonality? Based on only that, should we expect an increase on the provisioning number, or could be probably closer to the third quarter level?
I would say that in terms of the cost of risk, it's going to be more in line with what we've seen over the year. So it's going to be more like, I would say, something around the 3.5% or something within that range. I mean, it's also worth noting that if you look at the NPLs for the payroll portfolio, that slightly increased from the 1.2% in the previous year to the 1.4%, this is explained to two factors. One of them was the you know, the holiday period here in Mexico that leads to some delays in the collection, and the other one was, you know, a situation that arose with a government agency in the state of Mexico for a couple of distributors, but that collection we got in October. So this should normalize to the levels that we saw over the year, meaning something around the 3.5%.
Okay, all right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll take our next question from Nicolas Riva with Bank of America.
Yeah, thanks, Carlos and Angel, for taking my question. I have a follow-up on these FX losses on the 85 million pesos. So you said it's basically broken in two parts. One is the loss on the unhedged debt in dollars, the $30 million, and that's clear because the peso depreciated versus the dollar. But the second part, if you are hedging on that your FX risk, I would assume that you are long dollars and short pesos, and therefore you would have made money on that hedge in the third quarter. Are you actually hedging their FX risk, or why did you have that loss on that hedge in the third quarter? Thanks.
Because, I mean, if you look at the hedging, I mean, what you have, the thing about the following CNBV accounting principles is that when you use a different instrument other than the full cross-currency swap, meaning, for example, a call spread, which is a much more efficient way to hedge, that, according to the CNBV accounting principle, that isn't treated as hedge accounting. So basically, the effect that you see over in the 52 million pesos that I described earlier is simply associated to the valuation of the financial derivatives of the 100 million pesos that we have with color spreads, with call spread. So basically, that's the explanation. And it's basically, and the underlying aspect behind that, it was simply FX appreciation.
Now, Carlos, on this 100 million pesos call spread, is there a way then for us to predict the losses or gains based on FX movements? I mean, do you typically lose then this much amount? I mean, do you typically lose when you have the peso depreciating versus the dollar on that position?
Look, I mean, there are many aspects. If you look at how option derivatives are valuated, I mean, there are different aspects that affect the valuation of those. For starters, you know, the time value, you know, the money's time value. On the other hand, you have volatility and VFX, and there are many aspects that affect that one. But I think that the main aspect of this one is that only on this small portion of our consolidated debt, we have, you know, call spreads only with 100 million. We could be more aggressive in terms of hedging and having a much lower cost of funds, but given that we follow CNBV accounting principles, is that we prefer to be conservative in order of not having additional volatility on the P&L.
Okay.
If you want to detail all the hedging that we currently have, you can see that on our 3Q earnings release. I mean, you have over there the detail of all the hedging and the cost associated to each of them.
No, because it seems to be that going forward, I mean, if I want to predict your FX losses or gains in any quarter, I can just take the $30 million unhedged position and then, you know, see the change in the peso, which to me gave me a loss of 15 million pesos on that $30 million unhedged position in the third quarter based on what happened with the peso. But the other stuff seems to be not clear what's the rule of thumb on how much you lose or make on that, on those 100 million pesos call spread, depending on what happens with the FX, no?
Yeah, I mean, probably, yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I agree with that. And if you look at the year-to-date figure, it's a positive 190, 100, and almost 200 million. That's the year-to-date effect of that line. So, yeah, it's challenging in terms of assessing that one because, as I was explaining you, it is affected by many factors, as time value and things like that. But to tell you the truth, I mean, the effect about that one, the positive thing about that one, is that it is a much more efficient way in terms of the cost of funds. It's much efficient in terms of cost of funds. But anyway, as I started the conversation with your question, we are very conservative in terms of hedging.
Okay, thank you very much, Carlos.
Thank you.
We'll take our next question from Adrian Garcia with Invesco.
Hi, Carlos. Thanks for taking my question. I would like to see to hear your thoughts on the following. If I look at the trends of the company, I see an improvement in the asset quality vis-a-vis lower NPL ratios. However, and a slowdown in the origination and the amount of the growth that you've experienced in the portfolio. So it seems to me that you are growing more conservatively, looking concentrating on better borrowers. But also at the same time, the profitability of the business is decreasing, probably because you charge lower rates to these better higher quality clients. So I guess it's a comment, but also a question as to how do I get comfortable of the profitability of the business improving. It's mentioned in the past that this has been the bottom, but the trend has yet to turn in terms of profitability. So where can we expect that turn to really materialize?
Look, I mean, the explanation is whatever happens to the NIM, that's going to lead the way in terms of the profitability, and that's why we are so focused in terms of whatever affects the NIM. Namely, you know, in terms of product mix, one of the important things that we are trying to do is that, you know, as long as the Central American business, which has the most, by far the most profitable business that we have, with the highest NIM, as long as InstaCredit regains its way from the 11% that stood at this quarter, and let's say that this one, we could grow that business to become 13 or something around to 15, that's going to release a lot of pressure over the NIM. What we are seeing and what we intend to do is leveling the growth rate of the SMEs business, because even though it helps us a lot in terms of cost of risk, it put pressure on the NIM because, as you were mentioning, you are charging lower rates due to the, you know, a much better quality customers. But what I'm trying to say is that as long, and I believe that could be seen by the end of this year, is that if the net interest margin trends upward to something around the 18 or probably higher than that, either due to the cost of funds, a lower cost of funds because of all the things described before and because of product mix, I think that in terms of profitability, we should be, you know, trending upwards as well to our long-term guidance in terms of ROAs of about 5% and in terms of ROEs, you know, trending upwards to the 20% range or something within that. I mean, in any case, you know, the bottom line of this one would be we are convinced that we can meet our guidance for this year, you know, because of all the changes that we are making, because of the performance of the consolidated book, and because of the, you know, the disciplines that we've shown in terms of expenses. If you look at the SG&A line and so on and so forth, the company has made a lot of efforts in terms of, you know, controlling the efficiency ratio and whatever. So I think that the work has passed, and this should be positive overall in terms of the profitability of the company.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
With no questions in the queue, the question and answer session is concluded. Thank you all for being.
I would like to make one more remark, operator. Thank you again all for being in our call, and I would like to tell you that we are reigniting our repurchase program of shares. We are seeing a great opportunity at the cost of shares are trading. So we will reignite that in a most strong way in the coming weeks. And our family office is always interested in purchasing more stock. So I just wanted to leave that on the call. And thank you again all for being on the call.
Thank you all for being in today's conference call. Now you may disconnect.